Hollow your bones like a bird's. Chapter 3. Notes. As always, trigger warnings. Graphic discussion of suicide. Canon attempts, as well as implied. Descriptions of violence, including a focus on blood, grieving, and nightmares. Also, some true facts about nature that you might not have wanted to know. He'd always felt comfortable with heights. As a scrawny, scared kid, he'd learned, very quickly, that going up was the best thing he could do to avoid detection. He had been fast, light, and fearless when he climbed, tiny fingers fitting into handholds that barely existed. He loved moving upwards, loved the sensation of freedom, of safety it granted. Predators seldom looked up. It was a fact that he'd learned very quickly in life, and human beings were predators. He'd learned that early, too. Clint's feet found the edge of the narrow stone wall that surrounded the roof of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s headquarters. His toes scraped the bare air as he tipped his head back. His face baked in the sun as the wind tore at his hair, and he spread his hands out, let the wind curl around him, until it felt like he would lift up, until he could swear that the air would take him along, as if his body was no more than one dry leaf caught in the updraft. Clint opened his eyes and stared down at the city, so far down below him, and let the faint feeling of vertigo sweep through him. He concentrated on it, on centering himself, on finding the stability in his legs. The wind felt cold on his skin, and he was fine with it. Agent Barton? He glanced back over his shoulder. Bruce Banner was standing just outside the roof access door, his hands tucked in his pockets, his salt and pepper hair a tangled mass that moved with the wind. But his eyes were steady, his feet braced, his shoulders hunched against the wind. "Hey, Doc," he said, looking back over the city, keeping Bruce in the periphery of his vision. "What are you doing up here?" Banner shrugged, the fabric of his battered suit jacket riding up awkwardly with emotion. I can only take so much time inside," he said with a faint smile. "I'm still not... people are a problem, a bit." He moved forward, his steps very careful. "What are you doing up here?" "Just catching my breath." Clint glanced away, looking out over the smoky, darkened sky. The sun was there, somewhere hidden in the smog. It was still there, struggling through the darkness, and maybe one day he'd see it again. "Can I ask you to come down from there?" Bruce said, drawing Clint's attention again. Clint felt his lips twitch. "I'm not going to jump, if that's what you're worried about," he said. "Okay." It was an easy acceptance, but Bruce didn't move. "Will you come down?" Halfway to saying something snarky, he paused. The muscles in Banner's shoulders were tight. His face was set in very pleasant lines, but his eyes were dark, focused. "It bothers you." "It worries me," Bruce said. "Very much." "Thanks, but I'm fine," Clint said. And it was such an obvious lie that both of them ignored it. He sighed. "I like being here," he said at last. "Every instant, making the choice to stay, to keep my feet where they are." He gave Banner a grin that held no humor, no joy. "It's the farthest from death that I can get, to decide, second by second, not to jump." "And what if you make a different decision?" Clint paused, thought about that. I guess I'll cross that bridge when I come to it, won't I?" He turned back to the skyline, breathing in, wondering if he would always taste the burn of ozone in the city air, if he was imagining the sensation. Banner was silent for a long moment. "It's none of my business," he said at last, and there was an aching note to his voice. "I'm aware of that, Agent Barton, but I just..." He paused, glanced at the side. "There aren't many people in this world," he said, "who know what it's like to wake up in the ruins of a world and wonder how bad the damage is this time. To know that... He swallowed, his throat working with it. To know that people are dead, and you did that. Knowing that, without a doubt. Having to face that. He looked up at Clint, and his gaze was steady. Having to ask who you killed this time. Clint felt his right hand spasm and made an effort to smooth it against his thigh, because he could control this. He could control himself. "You ever jump?" he asked, his voice coming from a distance, his own mind pushing the words away, trying desperately for separation, for control, for denial. "Yes," Banner said, his voice stark. He tucked his hands in his pockets, his eyes never leaving Clint's. Or, rather, no. I knew jumping wouldn't do it. He shrugged. "Gun." Clint nodded. "Didn't work." "Didn't work." Banner cleared his throat, his lips pinched tight. "It won't work for you either," he said, and the tone was almost apologetic, soft in the wind. "Jumping, I mean. I just..." His eyes closed. "I'll go over after you. He, the other guy, seems to have a pretty good instinct for catching, so I don't..." He took a breath and expanded with it, far more than he should have. "It's not going to work for you," he said. His eyes opened, and now there was no fear in them, no doubt. "Don't jump. Please. Stay with me." "I didn't ask to be saved," Clint said, his toe scruffing close to the edge, finding the rough texture of the rock and running the sole of his boot across it. It pulled against his foot, resisting as he pressed down, making the muscles in his leg ache with remembered injury. "What gives you the right?" There was no heat to the words, no anger, just the strangest sense of curiosity, as if he really did want to know why. Bruce studied him for a moment, then he smiled. "I have a right," he said at last, "as another human being, as someone who hates violence, as someone who's seen enough death." He shrugged, his shoulders rising and falling with a quick jerk. "I'm sorry, but I am so sick of death." Clint grinned, and he didn't know why. He didn't care why, but he was grinning, and Banner was smiling back. "Can't argue with that," he said at last. "Come down? It's not good for my blood pressure, and that's, well, that's not good for anyone," Banner said, and there was a kindness in the broad, weathered hand he held out to Clint. It was a broad hand, weathered and battered, and this was a man who worked with his hands, who worked hard, who'd seen more than a few cold winters and burning summers. And his hand was as steady as a rock. Clint paused. "You know what's odd?" he said. And he meant it. It was strange what was going through his head. "You know what's holding me back? That I'll leave a mess that someone else has to clean up." He turned his head, his eyes finding the remains of the devastation, even at this distance. "One last mess that someone has to clean up. Doesn't seem fair." Bruce grinned, eyes crinkling up, cheeks creasing with it. "Whatever keeps your feet on the ground," he said. "Please come down, Agent Barton." Clint hopped down to the roof, not meaning to, not even aware of moving, but all of a sudden he was on the roof, his feet steady and Bruce's big, warm hand in his. For just an instant, Bruce's fingers clung to his, squeezing tight. Bruce released a shaky, uneven breath. "Thank you," he said. The grip was almost painful, and Clint was glad for it. Then, just like that, his knees buckled, and Clint had to grab for his shoulders. "Whoa, hey, you okay?" Fumbling, grabbing for his shirt, his arm, Clint managed to keep Bruce on his feet. "Doc?" His whole body was shaking, and for an instant, Clint fought against a spike of fear. But when Bruce raised his head, he was laughing, his fingers gripping the front of Clint's shirt. "You scared the hell out of me, Clint," he said, and the words dissolved into laughter. As Bruce collapsed against him, lost in gales of laughter, Clint shook his head, a chuckle slipping past his guard. Then another, and a real laugh, mixing with Bruce's, until he was laughing too hard to stand, let alone support Bruce, and they both went down, landing hard on the slate. Side by side, behind the shelter of the wall, they laughed, the sound half relieved and half hysterical. It took forever to get himself back under control. But when Clint finally managed it, Bruce was still sitting next to him, shoulder to shoulder, wiping his face with one shaking hand. "Oh my God," Bruce managed, a giggle erupting from him. He gave Clint a sideways look, and his face was flushed, his eyes dancing. "Sorry." Clint grinned back at him. "Why? I think I needed that." He relaxed back against the stone, his arms held loose and crossed on top of his upthrust knees. "Thanks." He took a deep breath. "Thanks. Yeah." Bruce was fumbling in his pockets, fingers digging, brow creased. "How are you doing?" Considering that, Clint gave a faint little nod. "Pretty fucking lousy." Bruce came up with a handkerchief and a faint smile. "Yeah, I imagine so," he said. He started cleaning the lenses of his glasses with quick little twitches of his fingers. "You talking to anyone?" "It's the only reason I'm allowed out on my own." He took a deep breath. "Doesn't really understand, though." "No," Bruce agreed. He kept his head down over his work. "They wouldn't." "Can I ask you something?" "Yes," he said, without a beat of pause. "You don't have to answer," Clint started. And Bruce glanced at him. "Yeah, I do. I started this," he said, calm about it. "You didn't come looking for me." Clint paused. "Did you come looking for me?" Bruce's eyes fell away. "It's better," he said, sidestepping the question, "if you're not alone. That's what I figured out. Mostly, that it was better if you're not alone." He slid his glasses onto his nose. "No good comes from being alone." He swallowed and cleared his throat. "I thought it would work. Thought that was the magic bullet. And it wasn't. Isn't." He glanced at Clint. "Being alone doesn't make anything better. So ask." Clint watched as he folded the handkerchief, the white fabric disappearing between Bruce's fingers. "Do you remember?" he asked. And the words tasted horrible, thick in his dry mouth. "When it happens. Do you remember it?" Bruce paused, his hands going still. He took a deep breath, his shoulder and chest expanding. "Fragments," he said at last. "Brief instants, most of the time. Enough. Enough that I can't deny that it's me." He looked up, meeting Clint's eyes. "Enough to know what's happened." His head moved, and his glasses caught the light. "How about you?" he asked. "What do you remember?" The wind whispered around them, and Clint opened and closed his mouth twice before he managed to force the word out. "Everything," he said, a whisper that could have easily been lost. But the wind stilled, everything went quiet, and the single word hung there. Bruce nodded. He didn't say anything, but there was no disgust in his face, and better than that, no pity. Clint swallowed. "I remember everything," he said. His knees pressed tight against his chest, his arms wrapped around them now, folding himself up tight. I could see it all, hear it all, and it was... He ran his tongue around the inside of his mouth, and it tasted like blood, like ash. Like being along for the ride in my own body, he said at last. I could see it all. I knew what I was doing, and I couldn't stop anything. I couldn't stop. He ran a thumb against the inside of his palm. Me. There was silence then, and he stared down at his hand, stared at the fingers as they twitched. There was a pattern there that he could almost understand in the muscle spasms. He forced his hand closed into a fist. I couldn't stop me, he repeated, because he wanted so desperately to believe that, to have someone, anyone, believe that. No, you couldn't, Bruce said. His gaze was steady. Clint, no one could. The sense of relief was dizzying, untrustworthy, unneeded, but still dizzying. I can't sleep, he said, looking up. I close my eyes, and I see my hands. I see... He broke off, swallowed hard, and the burn in the back of his throat was like smoke or acid. He coughed, tried not to gag. Everything. I can't stop it, and I know I should be able to. Bruce was silent for a moment. When he spoke, it was with deliberation, each word formed with care. Some things are beyond our control. Some things, once they happen, force us down paths we wouldn't take otherwise. We can't take that back. We can't change it. We can only live with what we've done. He took a deep breath. We can only live with what's been done to us. Clint braced his back against the stone wall, one knee drawn up in front of him. Bruce? Yeah? How do you do it? Bruce paused, his head tipped back so he could study the sky. There's a lot of choices we can make in this world, he said at last. His feet scuffed on the roof as he drew them up, curling his body forward to fold his arms around his upthrust knees. There are choices, Agent Barton. His lips twitched. Living with this is the best choice I've got right now. I don't always like it. I don't always, you know, handle it well. But the other choices that are open to me? He took a deep breath. I like them less. Least of the evils? Clint asked, and he wasn't moving. Not moving felt okay, felt good, felt fine. He was almost close enough to feel the heat of Bruce's shoulder, and that was fine. Best of what choices I can make, Bruce said. And I'd still like to make whatever choices are open to me. Clint tipped his head back, and the sky was blue today. Blue and bright and clear. Okay, he said, because he didn't know what else to say. Okay, Bruce agreed. Don't fall, Agent Barton. I don't think we can bear another loss. Okay, Clint repeated. He wasn't sure if that was agreement or just acknowledgement. He wasn't sure it mattered.
Hey, you planning on getting up today? Phil muttered something into the pillow, but didn't bother to raise his head. Grinning, Clint sat down on the edge of the bed and tugged the comforter away. Still covered by the sheet, Phil turned his head in Clint's direction. He yawned and batted Clint's hand away. Go away, he said, wrapping his arms around the pillow and burying his face in it again. Clint's smile died. Hey, he said, leaning over. He stroked a palm over Phil's hair, down to the nape of his neck. Are you sick? Phil gave him a look and a half smile. I'm fine. Go to work, Agent. He yawned again. I'll be right behind you. Then he rolled over and snuggled back down into the pillows, the sheets tangling around his waist. Uh-huh. Clint braced his hand on the bed, using it to brace himself as he reached around Phil. He ignored Phil's attempts to fend him off and pressed the back of his hand to Phil's forehead. You feel warm. I feel sleepy, Phil corrected him. He pushed Clint's hand away, rolling onto his back. It's fine, Clint. Go to work. What's wrong? Clint shifted closer, and this time, Phil caught his hand, weaving their fingers together. Phil squeezed his hand, giving him a faint, warm smile. It's okay, Phil said. I'll fix it. Fix what? Clint shifted, and his hand slid on the sheets. Distracted, just for a second, he picked up his hand and stared down at it, confused. It was wet with blood. What the hell? His eyes dropped onto the bed, where his hand had pressed into the sheets. There, in the dent produced by his weight, a dark shadow was gathering. Confused, not willing to believe it, Clint reached out and touched the sheets. The blood swallowed his fingertips, and he jerked back, hard. Drops of blood chased the movement, splattering along the white fabric. As he watched, horrified, each drop spread, blooming out. Each drop filled a hollow and began to overflow, thin streams going in all directions. What the? Clint scrubbed at the sheets, pushing away the blood, trying to empty the wrinkles. But the more he tore at the sheets, the more blood welled up beneath his fingers. What the ever-loving? Phil's hand caught his wrist. Stop it, he said, soft and chiding. Clint's head jerked up, and Phil smiled at him, even as drops of blood appeared on the plane of his cheek, at his hairline. The blood began to run over his face, over the length of his fingers. Oh, God. It's okay, Clint, Phil said, his head lolling in Clint's direction. You know I'll fix it.
Fix it? There's no... Oh, God!
Clint was fumbling, his legs tangled in the sheets, his hands scrambling across Phil's skin.
Where's all this? Oh, God, Phil, where's this coming from?
Phil's arm came up, slow and languid, and he pressed one finger over his breastbone, pressing down on the skin. Blood welled around his fingertip, pooling on his skin, then rolling in slow rivulets across the plane of his breast. Here, of course. His eyes closed as the finger slid down, leaving a trail of blood in its wake. Where you stabbed me? Clint shoved his hand away, going to his knees, pressing down hard, but he knew it wasn't going to work. Even as he leaned his weight against the welling flow, he knew it was useless. The blood oozed from between his fingers, and he choked on a sob.
I didn't. I swear, I didn't. Phil, you have to believe me. I...
But the blood was everywhere, washing over his hands, splattering down in puddles against the white sheets, spreading like the coming dawn. It's okay, Phil said, and he was smiling, that soft, gentle smile that he employed sometimes, the one that made him seem so blandly innocuous. He was smiling now, even as blood spattered across his throat, across the angle of his jaw, washing over his shoulder. Clint, I'll fix it. You know that. Clint stared at him, sobbing for breath, wanting to scream and not being able to pull in the air necessary to do it. Phil! I always fix your mistakes, Phil said. His teeth flashed, and there was blood on his lips, crimson and thick. Don't I? Clint woke up choking on a scream that went unheard, his limbs flailing, his whole body seizing. For an instant, he couldn't breathe, couldn't see, couldn't get past the horrifying images. Natasha's pale face swam into focus in front of him. Clint. Her fingers were tight on his shoulders, holding him down. He sucked in a breath in raw pants, focusing on the pinpricks of pain where her nails dug into his skin. When he slumped back onto the bed, retreating into sporadic tremors, her grip relaxed. Clint. He brought a hand up, scrubbing his fingers over his face. Yeah, he said.
His skin was damp with sweat. Fuck. Are you with me now? Her hands released him, and he missed the contact instantly. Yeah, sorry. He pushed himself up, sitting up so he could bury his face in his hands. I'm awake. His voice sounded raw, rough. Yeah. Bad? She asked. Just the usual, he said, running his hands through his hair, over the back of his neck, scrubbing at his shoulders and arms. His skin felt cold and clammy to his fingers. You know, seen one city burn beneath your feet, you've seen them all. Natasha didn't say anything to that, but she held a bottle of water out to him. Here, drink the whole bottle. You're dehydrated. Clint made a face, but he did as he was told. There was an odd aftertaste to it, and he gave her a look. What did you spike it with? Just a painkiller, she said, and she caught his arm when he made to stand up. Just a painkiller, she repeated, her voice sharp. You're a fucking liar, and I'm not going to keep your damn drug in my system, he said, shaking her off. I am not getting trapped in that nightmare because you think I need sleep. She placed both hands on his chest and shoved. I didn't drug you. It's basically electrolytes and Tylenol, she snapped, and Clint paused. Her eyes flashing, she glared at him. You think I don't know what the nightmares are like? I did not drug you. They were both breathing harder than they should have been. Clint held up the facade for another minute, then lowered himself back to the sweat-damp sheets. Fuck, he said, rubbing both hands over his face. Yeah. She didn't move in front of him, always waiting for a trick on his part, which was probably wise of her. You need to sleep, Clint. I need a lot of things. He chugged the rest of the water, getting it all down as quickly as he could. Finishing it off, he wiped the back of his hand across his mouth. Where were you tonight? Natasha sat down next to him. Out, she said. Clint gave her a faint, crooked smile. It felt unnatural on his face. Yeah, I noticed. He rolled the empty bottle between his hands. Giving me a longer leash, aren't you? She gave him a look. I can't hold your hand forever, Barton. He chuckled. Aw, really? But I was hoping you'd upgrade to one of those monkey backpacks with the tail that you could hold. Natasha's lips curled up. As pleasing as that thought is, no. She stood. I've been backing off. Only in the physical sense. He took a deep breath, then another, letting it chase the tremors from his body. You think I don't know you showed Bruce the way to the roof? She gave a faint shrug. He needed a breath of fresh air. I have the clearance to get the door open. You are a menace, Clint said. Another deep breath, and he pushed himself to his feet. Thanks. She responded only with a shrug. You okay with him then? Natasha paused. Yes, she said at last. She stopped, her lips pinching tight. Yes. He scares you, Clint pointed out. Natasha's eyes were clear as she met his. So do you right now. Clint nodded. Slowly, he headed for the door. Since when do you admit to being afraid? Since when do you? He stopped in the doorway, one hand gripping the frame. I guess neither of us have anything left to lose. He looked over his shoulder at her. Nat, where were you tonight? She slipped past him. At your place. Her footsteps steady, she headed up the hall. Come on. I think I really need a drink. His feet felt cold on the floor, and he focused on that. He focused on the sensation of pinprick pain, because if he let it, those words would send him over the edge. He knew they would. So he concentrated on his feet, on the slow, cold walk to the kitchen. He hovered in the doorway while Natasha turned on the light. Clint flinched back, not wanting to see anything too clearly right now, but he couldn't resist the hint of warmth that the small room offered. Carefully, he slipped inside, leaning against the cabinets. Natasha nodded at the medium-sized file box on the table. It's what I could get. I didn't want to risk taking too much, or certain things, she said, her words clipped. Things that would have been noticed. But... She ran a hand through her hair, a quick flick of her fingers, disordering her curls. It was a nervous tic that she usually controlled, and Clint kept his face blank. I got what you needed. Slowly, painfully slowly, he sank into a chair. His effects? What I could get, she repeated. He glanced up. The banked rage and frustration in her voice was painful to hear. Even through his numbness, he flinched at it. But Natasha met his eyes, her face set. She gave a flicker of a shrug. It's enough. Yes, he agreed, but he didn't reach for the box. You want to do this alone? She asked, leaning back against the counter. I don't want to do this at all, he said. And he was tired, bone-dead tired. He ached with it. Bracing his elbows on the table, he let his head fall into the cradle of his palms. Pressing hard against his closed eyes, he took a few deep breaths. The brush of her fingers against his hair was almost agonizing. I need to know if there's anything else you can't live without, she said, her voice still. Before... He reached for the box, the movement sharp and violent. Yeah, I know. Despite that, his hands were shaking as he dragged it over. It took him too long to get himself under control, or at least to control the shaking of his hands and arms. Fuck, he mumbled under his breath. Clint. He ripped open the box, shoving the flaps back before he had time to stop himself. Yeah. He reached in, pulling out a battered blanket first, a fleece monstrosity that he'd picked up somewhere. Or was it Phil? One of them had, or both, together. It was a blue and gray plaid, something that should have faded into the woodwork, but somehow it stood out like a sore thumb no matter where it was. Clint loved it. Phil had rolled his eyes a lot, and still, on those rare nights when they were curled up together on the couch, it was the first one he pulled out. It was warm and comforting and stupid. Clint set it aside with careful hands and turned his attention to the rest of the box's contents. A well-worn ranger shirt. A thin, battered paperback with a broken spine. Clint's recipe file. A three-ring binder filled with hand-lettered loose-leaf paper and the occasional photocopy. A pair of brown slippers. Phil's, not his. A slim pen, silver and gold, in a wooden box. It had been a present from Clint. Two ties, one with tiny, almost invisible Starship Enterprises dotting its pristine silk surface, the other a more classical stripe. A 10 that Natasha took from him as soon as he pulled it out, heading for the stove. An envelope that he weighed in his hand before splitting it open. A quick shake, and two dog tags, connected by a chain, slid into his palm. He held them up, reading the familiar lines of text half a dozen times before he allowed his fingers to close around them. Beneath his fingers, he could feel a dent that he'd put on one of them, a shot he'd had to take to save Phil's life. How? Natasha was at the stove, stirring milk in a pan. I had replicas made, she said. Traded them out of his file. The Coulsons won't know the difference. He wanted to say that it wasn't right. He wanted to give these back to Phil's family, to the parents who'd raised him well, to the sisters who loved him, to the family who mourned him. He wanted to. He wished he was capable of it. Instead, he wrapped the chain around the tags and jammed them into the pocket of his pajama pants. Thank you, he said, gripping them tight beneath the cover of the table. At the stove, Natasha gave a one-sided shrug, uninterested in his praise. There's some photos in there as well, she said, the words almost offhand. Clint nodded, carefully peeling the flap of the envelope out of the way. There were six photos there, most of them familiar. He lingered on Juan, of him and Phil in the snow, their bodies angled together. He was grinning at the camera, leaning forward, his hands behind his back. There was snow on his shoulders, in his hair. Phil was upright, in a black overcoat, with a red scarf at his neck, a faint smile on his face. One gloved hand held a snowball, and an instant after Natasha had taken the picture, they'd been back at their war. Phil had won. Clint had landed more shots, but in the end, Phil had ended up pinning Clint in the snow. Both of them laughing, as Natasha had stared down at them with amusement. The last one was on a transport, after some mission. He wasn't sure which one. But he was asleep, his head on Phil's shoulder, and Phil was smiling, a warm, affectionate curve to his lips, his cheek on Clint's head. Clint stared down at it. "You took this one?" he asked. "I think I took most of them," she said, not even glancing in his direction. "Occupational hazard. You don't have many other friends." She reached into the cabinet for a mug. "What'll happen to—" He stopped, almost mid-word, knowing better than to ask. He knew the answer anyway. "They've already sent a sweeper team to remove all the classified things, everything pertaining to S.H.I.E.L.D." She tapped the spoon against the edge of the pot with a brisk flick of her wrist. "Before Coulson's family arrives, they'll remove everything else." "Everything having to do with me," Clint said. He rubbed a hand over his face, tossing the photos down. "Yeah, I know. Only the continuing chaos in the city had bought them this much time. Travel was still highly discouraged, especially in and out of New York City, except in cases of necessity. He wondered what kind of cover story S.H.I.E.L.D. had provided the Coulsons, and if they suspected the true part their only son had played in saving the Earth. It didn't seem fair that they might never know. Phil wouldn't have cared, of course. But Clint did. Natasha didn't say anything for a moment. "They'll pack your things up," she said, her voice gentle. "I just wanted to be sure you'd get some..." She shook her head. "There's more." Knowing a change in subject when he heard it, Clint reached for the box. The folded gray fabric gave him pause. He knew what it was, even as he unfolded it. Still, just to convince himself that he wasn't imagining things, he unfolded the shirt. The logo was a simple reproduction of Captain America's shield, a stark print of red, white, and blue that covered the chest. The shirt he'd shoved behind their dryer in a fit of pique. He stared down at it. "How'd you—" Natasha gave him a faint smile. "Phil knew." Clint gave a faint chuckle. "Of course he did." He ran his fingers over the worn Captain America emblem. "How'd you know?" "He asked me what he should do about the fact that his lover was an immature little boy who dropped his favorite shirt behind the dryer vent." "That's unfair," Clint said with a faint smile. "I didn't drop it back there. I jammed it in with my foot so hard that I nearly broke something. The dryer or my ankle. It was a toss-up." "Childish," Natasha said, smiling. Clint's fingers sank into the fabric, wadding it up between his hands. He folded forward and buried his face in the soft shirt. It smelled of their usual fabric softener and Phil's cologne. "Why didn't he get it out then?" he muttered. "Because he knew you'd come to terms with it eventually." Natasha set a cup in front of him, the faint click of porcelain on the tabletop bringing his head up. "Stop it." Clint reached for the cup, not willing to relinquish the shirt entirely. "I know what—" "Just stop, Natasha." "It's Phil's mixture, chocolate and cinnamon and some hint of vanilla that Phil had always denied, made with hot milk and a swirl of whipped cream. It wasn't as sweet as commercial brands. It didn't have that chalky aftertaste. But right now, Clint almost wished for Swiss Miss in a little paper packet. Maybe he could forget what this stuff tasted like if he drank enough of the commercial crap. Natasha was watching him, her eyes hooded beneath lowered lashes. Without another word, she reached into the box and pulled out a small stack of black-bound notebooks. She set them down in front of him. Clint didn't even bother glancing at them.
You need to turn those into fury, he said, and his voice shook on the words. The mug was something to hold on to, and nothing more. A prop. No, I don't. He shrugged, a quick jerk of his shoulders. Get rid of them, Nat. Clint. He stood up, too hard, too fast, and the cup jolted on the table. Get rid of them. He leaned over, his face twisting. I don't want them, and I won't have them. I only took yours and mine, Natasha said. But you should. Clint turned on his heel and stalked out of the room. If there was a door to the kitchen, he would have slammed it behind him. By the time he made it to the bedroom, he hadn't the energy left for the gesture, and instead just started stripping as he walked, peeling away clothes that were sticking to his skin with new sweat. And it was panic that dampened his skin now, panic that made him shake, made him choke on his breath. Leaving his clothes where they fell, he stumbled into the bathroom and into the shower. He turned it on full blast and didn't wait for the water to warm before he stepped into the punishing spray. The water was icy cold for an instant, stinging against his skin, and he reveled in it. As the water heated, he folded his arms against the wall and let his head fall forward onto them, letting the water pound his head and back, letting the water drive every thought out of his mind until he was aching and exhausted and dizzy with the heat. Only when he swayed on his feet, his vision pale gray at the edges, did he fumble for the taps, turning the water off. There was a folded towel on the sink, clean and dry and unfamiliar, and he was grateful for it. Even more so for the fresh clothes she'd left for him beneath it. He considered the Captain America shirt for only a second before he pulled it on. It was too tight in the shoulders and arms, but he didn't care. Natasha was in bed already, her form barely large enough to disturb the blankets. He reached for them and couldn't manage to force his fingers to make contact. Pulling back, he gripped the hem of his shirt instead, pulling hard against the fabric. Clint, come to bed. The words were simple, calm. And he obeyed, because he didn't want to make his own choices anymore.
Are you sleeping? Define sleeping, Clint said. He was seated on the back of the couch, perched there with his feet hanging down over the back. Dr. O'Brien hadn't said a word about it. She'd just moved her own chair so that she could stay in his line of sight. With a flick of his wrist, he bounced a small rubber ball against the wall, the floor, and back into his hand. He repeated the gesture an instant after he caught the ball again, adjusting his aim, adjusting the angles. The state of unconsciousness that is an important part of your body's cycle of recovery, Dr. O'Brien said. Fuck no, Clint said. He paused, squeezing the ball in the palm of his hand, letting the muscles of his arm flex with the force of his grip. Are you still having nightmares? She asked. Yes. He threw again, with a little more force this time, and a little more spin, tracking the path of the ball before he could snag it back out of the air. Tell me about them. Clint flexed his shoulders. No thanks. Why not? O'Brien asked. Her heels were black today, but the inside of the heels themselves were bright lipstick red, a sharp slash that began at the bottom of her foot and arched like a blade through the air. As she crossed her legs at the ankle, the heels brushed against the carpet. You hear one nightmare, you've heard 'em all, Clint said to her. And I'm sick of thinking about it. Everyone's dreams are different. Yours are not like anyone else's. Her pen moved against the paper, soft and rhythmic and smooth as silk. Even as she spoke, it didn't pause in its forward momentum. And they speak to what is happening. Tell me about your dreams, Clint. I stood over a burning city and guided a monster towards the destruction of my world, he shot back, throwing a little too hard. He picked the ball out of the air, but it was a close thing, his fingertips barely managing to make contact. What do you think I dream about? Not that. He paused, but didn't look in her direction. Why not? Because you'll talk about that, Dr. O'Brien said, her lips curving up. Point to you, Clint said. He threw the ball straight down now, compensating for the deadening effect of the carpet. And I'm still not going to talk about my nightmares. All right, she agreed. Tell me about your team. Still don't have a team, he said. Is Fury pushing this? Director Fury doesn't ask to see my files, she said. What he thinks of the situation, he hasn't shared with me. Then why do you keep bringing it up? Because you need connections, she said. And you've been attending the briefings. Yeah. Why? If they're not your team, why are you going? Because Natasha wants me to, he shrugged. I gotta be somewhere during the day. I can zone out just as easily in the meetings as I can at home. Not like I can do more than basic practice shooting on the range, and I'm not cleared to do anything else. She ignored that. She was pretty good at ignoring his digs. Why does Natasha want you to go to the briefings? I don't know. She hasn't told you? Clint flicked the ball against the wall, a rapid tattoo of 1, 2, 1, 2. She tells me. I don't believe what she tells me is the truth. So I don't know. Do you like them? I don't know them. You know Agent Romanov? A little. The stroke of her pen almost came into alignment with the bounce of his ball. Tell me about Natasha Romanov. Natasha, he said, after a moment of thought, is a shrike, a great gray shrike. The pen paused, the faint scratch coming to a gentle halt. Tell me about shrikes. Clint bounced the ball with a flick of his wrist. Shrikes are little birds, pretty, in a plain way. They're gray and black and white. They're easy to overlook. You can mistake them for a sparrow or a songbird. He caught the ball and rolled it between his fingers. You can look right past a shrike. You can mistake them or ignore them. Even if you like birds, even if you look for birds, it's easy to miss a shrike. Easy to think they're no threat, until you see their beaks. The Latin name of the great gray shrike is Lanius excubitor. He caught the ball and flipped it into the air, watched it fall into his hand. Literally translated, it means the sentinel butcher. They take high ground, the highest point they can find, on the tips of tree branches and electrical poles. They can hover in the air. They take prey on the wing and on the ground. They take mice and other rodents, lizards and frogs. They'll wait until they see movement. They watch. They see everything. And if their prey can't be lured out, they'll flush it from the undergrowth. And they take birds, too. They're known to imitate the calls of songbirds to flush other birds out of cover. Clint rolled the ball over the knuckles of his fingers and flicked it at the wall with a twist of his wrist. It bounced hard, and he snagged it on the return. Mostly males. In spring, when they're distracted with their mating displays, a shrike will come in from beneath them or behind them and snag their legs with its beak, bring it down, and use its hooked beak to batter its skull until the prey dies. His lips twitched. Sometimes you'll see them on the highest points, on the bare tips of tree branches, as high as they can go, and if you just glance, you'd mistake them for a songbird, until you spot the... He paused. The graveyard. The decaying kills. The skeletons. Because shrikes will take their prey, he said, his fingers flexing, and impale them on the highest point on a tree, or on thorns, or barbed wire, on bare twigs, twigs they use like blades. They take the bodies of their prey and stab them down, and use the treetops as a larder, because insects or small frogs or lizards, they can eat in a few bites, but their claws aren't strong enough to rip apart larger prey. So they impale the dead and dying, and once it's safely pinned, rip it apart with their beaks. He fell silent, and Dr. O'Brien let him sit, her own silence not an uncomfortable thing. Why do they remind you of Agent Romanov? She asked at last. Because it's easy to mistake what she is. His lips twisted as he threw the ball, caught it, passed it to his other hand. It's easy to mistake her for a songbird or ride her off as another bird of prey, another simple killer, but she's not. He cradled the small rubber sphere in his fingers, rolling it over and over. She took what should have been a defect, What the whole world sees as a defect and twists it to her own use. She learns. She fights. She survives. She's nothing you want her to be, and she'll adapt the world to her use. He pulled back and through, too hard, too sharp, the ball ricocheting up and back. And you underestimate her at your peril. He threw, and this time, Dr. O'Brien's hand snapped out and caught the ball in midair. Do you trust Agent Romanov? He studied her. Yes. Why? Because she'll do what needs to be done. O'Brien's lashes dipped, covering clear, sharp eyes. And what's that? Clint shrugged. You'll need to ask her that. Dr. O'Brien smiled. I will. She turned back to her notes. I'm going to recommend that you be allowed to use your bows again. Oh, thank God, Clint said, his shoulders slumping. Thank you. I'm sure you're getting quite sick of the weapons available on the range. I'm more sick of fucking blunted shafts, Clint grumbled. They're held to balance. But in exchange, she began, and Clint gave her a look. Stop whining. You had to know there was a catch, O'Brien chided. I was hoping that there wasn't, Clint said. He pushed off the couch, coming back to his feet. You're too much of a cynic for that, Agent Barton. She handed over his ball and a prescription page. Have this filled. I can't check to see if you're taking it, but I can quite easily check if you've picked it up. I don't. It's not a sleeping pill, she said, coming to her feet. It's an anti-anxiety medication. He folded the page up. I won't take it. Perhaps not, she said, with a faint smile. But sometimes having it in hand is enough. She closed the pad with a flick of her hand. Then, the choice is yours. Clint shoved the page into his pocket. I'm getting real sick of choices, he said. She paused. How did you like having them taken away? She asked. That, he agreed, was worse. Try to keep that in mind, she said, her voice gentle. And fill the damn prescription, Agent.